Welcome to the Hey Boomer Podcast, the live show that inspires boomers to recognize their own strengths and relevance through thought-provoking conversations with extraordinary guests. Today, we will be talking with John Tarnoff about creating your dream job over 50. My name is Wendy Green, and I am your host of Hey Boomer.
Hello, Hey Boomer listeners. So glad that you joined us today. I want to tell you a quick story. Back in 2017, I was working for a company out of Annapolis, Maryland, as their director of training. This company provided travel risk security and travel risk management for people that, you know, were in corporations and traveling all over the world. And it was a great job. I really enjoyed it. I created an online university for them. And then in April of 2017, my boss called because I was working remotely. I was working here in Greenville, South Carolina. And he said that my services were no longer needed. He said that I was going to have to transition the current clients that I had to someone else, that I would get a month's severance pay. I was in shock. The thing that had happened at the company is that they had been recently purchased. And so that explains some of the reason for me transitioning out. But I was 64. I thought I had one more year to go with this company before I could go on Medicare. And it just really devastated me. It took me a while to get my feet back under me, to think about what was next. And I knew, or I believed, that trying to find another job that was as meaningful, as useful, and that paid as well as this job in Maryland was going to be difficult. After about a year, I finally took another job for half what I was making. And that also had terrible hours. So when I got laid off from that job here when COVID hit, I wasn't too devastated this time. And you know what my pivot was. I started Hey Boomer. But my guest this week, John Tarnoff, is a career transition coach. And had I known John back in 2017, I probably would not have suffered as much, or it would not have taken me as long. And I probably would have turned out with something a whole lot better than what I did end up with if I had known John and been able to talk to him. Before I bring him on, I just wanted to tell you about the newest project that I have. It is called Turn Your Retirement Upside Down. It's an 8-week program that I wrote. And the way it's going to work is that each week I will send you a new module, and each module is going to have exercises, reflection time, things that you're going to put some effort into, but none of you are afraid of a little effort. And then at the end of that week, you and I will schedule a phone call, and we will walk through what you learned, what you struggled with, dig a little deeper to come up with the insights that you really need to move into the next phase of your life in a way that is meaningful and relevant and useful and passionate to you. So if you're interested in finding out more information about that, you can email me at heyboomer0413@gmail.com. So let me bring John on. Hey, John.
Hi there. Hi, everybody.
Good to see you. Thank you. Let me tell them a little bit about you. So John Tarnoff is a career transition coach, a speaker, author who helps late career professionals transition to meaningful and sustainable second act careers beyond traditional retirement. John was fired 39% of the time during his 35 years as a film producer, studio executive, and tech entrepreneur. He reinvented his own career at 50 years old, earning a master's degree in spiritual psychology to focus on education and training. Additionally, he co-runs a graduate management program for Carnegie Mellon University based in Los Angeles. John is the author of Boomer Reinvention, How to Create Your Dream Career Over 50, ta-da, and has been named a top influencer in aging by PBS Next Avenue. So welcome, John, to Hey Boomer.
Thanks, Wendy. It's great to be here. I love your show.
Thank you. So glad to have you. So take us back to when you decided to reinvent your career at 50. What brought that on and how you decided on the path you took?
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, I have this long background in the entertainment business, notoriously volatile field. But I learned over the course of these transitions of getting jobs, jumping to jobs, losing jobs, what resilience and sustainability really was about for a career point of view. So I learned a lot in that process. But I hit a real wall at 50. I had a startup during the tech bubble that had completely washed out along with everything else in 2001. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I really didn't feel like I either wanted to go back or could go back to the kinds of jobs that I had had on the film production side. And so I decided to take a break and I went back to school to earn this psychology degree. Not so much because I thought at the time that I wanted to be a coach or a counselor or a psychologist, but that I really needed to learn more about myself and who I was and where I wanted to go and what was going to be kind of more important for me at this stage of my life, to build a little bit more self-awareness. And ironically, that brought me back into entertainment. I networked my way into a kind of a dream job at DreamWorks Animation. And I spent most of the 2000s at DreamWorks, but I was not working in production in the way that I had always worked in production, which was developing scripts and working with writers and directors. And animation's a very different field. And I found myself much more drawn to the people side and the people management side of their business at a time when they needed this kind of management because they were growing so fast. And I wound up developing and running a bunch of people-oriented initiatives, outreach to universities to hire graduates, internal artistic and managerial training for people to kind of bring up their skill level and help them teach other skills to one another. And it was a great gig until the recession hit. And not surprisingly, the company took a hit, a change of direction, and they decided that all of these kind of new development-oriented initiatives that they had been doing and that I had been pioneering were kind of not on the agenda. Mm-hmm. And so I realized it was time for me to move on. And interestingly, it was one of the most, adult, mature, caring separations that in over my 18 or so jobs in entertainment, I'd never experienced anything like this before. It was really kind of a bittersweet mutual realization that we were going in different directions. And this is an important insight for those of us who are experiencing career transition at this point and who are experiencing layoffs in our 50s. And parenthetically, there's an interesting statistic around that. 56% of people over 50 will involuntarily lose their jobs.
Wow, 56%.
Period, paragraph, right? Whether it's through a layoff or a reorganization or a downsizing or whatever you want to call it, if you're over 50, you have less than a 1 in 2 chance of holding on to your job by the time you turn 60. So it's time for us to realize that it's about fit. It really is about our fit. It's not about whether we're good at our job or bad at our job. We're good at our job. After 30, 40 years in the workforce, we know a thing or two. The question is, where can we best apply it? Mm-hmm. So the reinvention process for me is kind of a combination of all of this kind of introspective work that I did in my psychology degree, coupled with the resilience work of having had to change jobs so many times over the course of my career.
So you're a very prolific blogger, John. I love reading your blogs. And in one of them, there's a familiar saying that all of us, and I think in this generation, is like, you know, follow your bliss and the money will follow. And we were talking before we came on, you know, like that part of what coaches do, I think, is also try and help people go, oh, think, what are your passions? What do you love? You know, and that's going to work for you. Well, there's a little twist to that that you put in there. So can you talk to us about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, the first thing I want to say about this is this question of assessments and, Myers-Briggs and StrengthsFinders and Berkman and all these kind of great psychological tools that companies use to kind of figure out what you're good at, you know, how to configure a team and you know, what your emotional quotient is and your mindfulness and all that. It's very important work. However, it is not for you. So my concern about assessments is that you wind up getting pushed into a box that ends up limiting you, where you say, I mean, I don't know how many of you have kind of been around a room where you're kind of like trading Myers-Briggs designations. Oh, I am an INFJ. Oh, I'm an ENJ, whatever.
Right.
But you're not, right? You're more than that. So I really want to encourage everyone here to think much more individually about, you know, who you are. And not necessarily, you know, find yourself limited into the box. And as to the question of bliss versus bliss and passion, the word that I use that you're alluding to is usefulness.
Yes.
And I actually kind of got this insight through a Gen Xer. I was listening to a commencement speech at Columbia, delivered by a guy named Mark Horowitz, who is a venture capitalist in Silicon Valley. And he's a Columbia grad. And he basically said in his speech something to the effect that if everyone who followed their bliss, or if every contestant on American Idol followed their bliss, they'd be a superstar. And the truth is, you can follow your bliss, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the money will flow. And his suggestion was, this is where I got it, it was usefulness. Follow your usefulness. First, figure out what it is that you're really good at doing and really good at delivering. And look back over the many years you've been at work and in business. And remember the times where you really scored, where you really had a success, where you really connected with one or more people around something that you did that really panned out. And start to put those little touch points together to figure out how you can craft a message around what you do that's so truly useful. And I'm going to say one more thing about the passion element. And what people find is that you can actually find your bliss and your passion through your usefulness. So that's the flow. Start with the usefulness, and you will find that through the impact that you make in what you achieve and the transformations and the service that you do for other people, there's tremendous bliss associated with that.
Yeah, and I think I was going to follow that up with, once you find your usefulness, once you start presenting that to potential employers or other people, your passion's going to come through because you're going to feel so good about what you have done and accomplished. And feeling useful, I think, is ultimately important. I know my mother, who is 90, still works hard to feel useful. So, yeah, I think that's awesome.
Well, I think this goes along with the idea that as we get older, we are much more driven by meaning and purpose than we are by money and things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So get into some details with me. You have your book, Boomer Reinvention. I've been laid off, okay? And I am now floundering around saying, who's going to hire me? You know, I'm over 60. Where do I even get started?
I tell all my clients to start with a journal.
Start with a journal.
So this is not your garden variety teenage high school diary. This is a daily, short, one page, 10, 20 minutes journal. I use this kind of notebook, very simple little Moleskine notebook. And I basically write, you know, one page a day, every day. I scribble it down, handwritten. Don't do this with a keyboard. You want to experience the mind flow. The act of doing the journal and writing it in longhand is going to connect you to the inner knowingness inside. And this is where the spiritual psychology comes in, along with a lifting of the concept of morning pages from a great book by Julia Cameron called The Artist's Way, which many of you may be familiar with. Mm-hmm. And she's talking about how to get over writer's block. But I think the same thing applies in our career situation. If you get used to dialoguing with yourself through your journal every day, and it can be about nothing. It can be about writing, I have nothing to say today. Why am I writing in this stupid journal? Oh, because I heard this guy on a livecast talking about, okay, I'm trying it out. And then all of a sudden, something pops into your head. An interesting, unexpected insight or a memory or a person that you haven't contacted in a long time who could be a great contact for you right now. Whatever it is, the important part about this is the discipline of starting to really build yourself back up, particularly in times of uncertainty. So when I was done at DreamWorks in 2009, beginning of 2010, I didn't have a job, but I knew that I wanted to go full time onto this focus that has led to where I am now. Mm-hmm. That journal every day just saved my life, because I would wake up in the morning and panic, going, I'm running out of money, don't know where it's coming from, I'm trying to start this practice, I have no real track record or I've never done anything like this before in my life, what am I going to do? And I just would write every day, write all the anxiety. And sure enough, by the time I got to the end of the page, I had a clear idea of what I was going to do that day. Mm-hmm. So that's the first step.
I have certainly used that myself. And sometimes I find that a question will come up in a conversation like this. And I'll think, oh, that's a good question to journal about tomorrow. And so I'll just write it down at the top of my next journal page, because otherwise you're right. Sometimes you're sitting there going, I don't know what to write. What am I have to write about today?
Yeah. So, and here's another little pro tip. So at the back of the journal, I keep a couple of post-it pads, so that if I'm in the middle of the journal and I come up with an idea of, oh, I better call so-and-so, I don't interrupt the flow of the journaling. I write it on the post-it and I go back to the journal.
That's a really good idea. Okay, so you've come up with some ideas of who you are, what your usefulness is. And, you know, we've got to update our resumes. And then there's this whole thing about, well, you know, if I'm going to send my resume off into this black hole because everybody's requiring you to send it through the internet. How do you get it seen?
Well, don't rely on your resume.
Okay.
85% of jobs are filled through referrals. So my whole approach is to get yourself referred and use your network. And anyone in this business will tell you that your network is your number one career building asset. And too many people, particularly at our age, trying to go through job boards, resume submissions, hundreds of applications come in on average to each job posting. And the chances are the skills that you put on your resume are not going to line up with the skills that the recruiter or the intern who is reviewing the resumes coming in, you're not going to match up to that. And then even if you do, the question is going to be, well, how old are you? Because ageism is a thing. It is vicious. It is out there. It's real. And there's nothing that you or I or anyone can do in the individual moment to mitigate it. If they don't like the fact that you're older, if they are intimidated by your experience, if they feel kind of culturally disconnected from you because they don't hang out with a lot of older people, they don't get the wisdom or the applicability of your background, your skills, the job, they just don't want to know about you, you're not going to win that battle. You're not going to win that battle by leaving the dates off your resume or off your LinkedIn. They're going to find out. If they are biased against you, they're biased against you. So be proud of who you are. Go out and meet other people in your field, in your chosen field. Build a network. Rekindle relationships with the people that you've known all your career, even if it's been years. And most of all, to support this process, I know I'm rambling a little bit, I apologize. You've got to figure out what your value proposition is, your career narrative. What is it that you do? What is the value that you provide? And you've got to sell that. You've got to sell that as a product.
So
I know I've started a whole bunch of threads here. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, all of this, ageism is real. I mean, we've all experienced it.
We all experience it.
Even though, as Bridget says here on the comments, it's illegal, it is real. It happens. Yeah. And, you know, there are things that you read, well, don't put the date you graduated from college, or don't put, you know, more than 10 years worth of experience and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But does ageism impact women more than men?
Yes. Well, the entire question of second act careers, I think, is much more challenging for women for kind of obvious reasons. Women have been suffering under the wage gap forever. So there are all sorts of expectations that relate to women that don't relate quite as much to men. I think ageism applies worse to women in terms of how they're being perceived in the jobs market. And I also think that there are traditionally personal self-judgment questions that women are dealing with in terms of, are they entitled to continue working? Are they entitled to be in the workforce? That's happening at any age. And I think, the multiple waves of feminism are little by little, eroding that self judgment and self-sabotage that goes on. But all of these factors, when you get to be in an older age bracket, all of these compound, unfortunately.
Yeah. And the question of also is, am I still good enough? You look at some of these job descriptions and you're thinking, I don't know all of that, and I think that's where your usefulness comes in.
Yeah, but this comes back to the question of stop looking at job descriptions and stop focusing your search on what you can fit into. Mm-hmm. If you're going to fit into a position, it's going to be because someone that you know or someone who has met you, who gets you, says, oh, don't worry about the job description. We need you at our company to do this role because I know that you're good. You need to meet all these people. Let me be your champion, your advocate. And again, it's the referrals, right? It's about the personal relationships. It's really hard to really describe the impact of a full life's career in a 2-page resume.
Right. And what about starting your own thing? I mean, you did it. Now I'm doing it. We're in our late 60s, as we discovered. I think the need to feel useful and impactful and make a difference and relevant all continues on well past 50.
Absolutely. I think that whether you start your own business, your own practice, hang out a shingle of some sort. Now, by the way, is the easiest and the cheapest time to start a new business. You want to think much more entrepreneurially than you may have thought in the past, because it is, regardless of whether it's your business or someone else's business, that's the question of fit again. And fit is associated with an entrepreneurial attitude. You have to be there to solve a particular set of problems. If the problem is solved, or if the problem you solve is not germane to that organization at that time, that team, then there's no reason for you to be there. You're not the right fit. So you have to figure out what it is that you do. You know, what is the dimension of your peg? And then you have to find the right hole to fit into that corresponds to the product, the service, the transformation that you provide. So again, it gets back to that self-reflective question. And so a lot of the process for me in career transition, career reinvention, becomes about figuring out that value proposition. And it starts with your sense of usefulness. It starts with that retrospective look on your career and what you've excelled at. But it also requires that you reach out to people that you trust, people you've known for a long time, people who may actually in the past have had contentious relationships with you. So for example, I think it's a really good idea to talk to a former supervisor about what you should be doing, about what your strengths and weaknesses are and were, and to resolve questions that you may have about the past. I like to say that in order to create the future, you have to reconcile the past. And if you don't reconcile the past, every meeting that you go into, you're going to carry a little bit of that unease with you, to the point where someone might say, you know, I really like this person. They were good. I think they could do the job, but there's something off. I don't know what it was. There was something that they were nervous. They didn't look me in the eye. I mean, whatever it is. And I think to a great degree, that stems from a lack of reconciliation, a lack of resolution about the past, insecurities that you might have about bridges that you burned, decisions that you made, jobs that you lost, whatever it is. You've got to kind of get that, you know, whole. You've got to become integral with yourself. And working with other people who know you well, who are there to support you, can help you externalize this. Also, the journaling helps that, to the point where you go, okay, I'm ready. I'm clear. I'm putting the past behind me and I'm completely focused on the future. And here's what I want to do. Here's what it solves. Here's how to describe it. Here's how I do it. Here's how much it costs. Here's how long it takes. All those who, what, why, where, when, and how questions. And you present that. You present that to as many people as you possibly can. And sooner or later, you will find someone who says, that's exactly what I need.
Mm-hmm. And I think that clearing out some of the past is important. Like, you now embrace without shame, I was fired.
Yeah.
This much percentage of my past. How did you get to being like, okay, everybody's going to say, oh, that's horrible. How did you get comfortable with that?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the psychology training, and the psychology training really focused a lot on these questions of self-responsibility and self-forgiveness. And so learning some of those techniques was very, very instrumental in my ability to clear a lot more and worse stuff from my past than losing a job. But I will say, there was a job that I didn't put on my resume for years. It was really the low point. It was in the early 90s, and I was kind of struggling, and I had come to the end of a contract with a company, and I didn't know really what I could do. And it was just a low point. And I got hired by this other company. The president of the company thought I was great, but he was in New York, and the LA office was where I was working, and they didn't think I was so great. They had no idea why I was there. I lasted 6 months. I really gave it a good shot. It was the wrong fit. It was absolutely the wrong fit. But, and I was kind of fired pretty ignominiously. It was like, come and see the head of the LA office, walk in, today's your last day, I'm gonna pick up your check, get out of the office. It was like that. And I was crushed.
Yeah.
And I was mostly crushed because I had done this out of weakness. I had kind of tried to make something work that was wrong. I should have never done that. And I was humiliated. And I just didn't want to talk about it for years. And then kind of as I was writing the book, I realized, you know, I need to take a dose of my own medicine here. So I wrote about it in the book and I used it as a template for people to use in how to reframe a bad job loss, a humiliating situation, some kind of negative past memory that you want to clear. So there's some techniques to do it. And I talk about that in the book.
Yeah, there's so much that you said in that, you know, like taking something out of a sense of weakness or desperation, you just know it's going to be wrong.
Right.
And yet you're feeling desperate and weak.
Right. So all the more reason not to do it at this time. Right. Right. I mean, don't make those decisions, particularly at this time, because, you know, in to be perfectly frank, we don't have that much time left, right? We need to make every day count. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the way we can make every day count is to make ourselves most important today. And so part of that has to do with making self-honoring choices at every opportunity. Use the journal to do this. You know, some of these self-forgiveness techniques that I talk about in the book, all of this kind of combines to clear your head from all of the limiting beliefs of the past about what I should be doing, or I should do this, or I was always told that I was good at whatever that is. It's a new day. It's a new opportunity. Take advantage of it. Be strong inside yourself. You can do it. You've survived this far. There's no reason why you can't turn this around.
Yeah. And, you know, I understand people being in this situation where they're worried about paying their rent and or their mortgage. And so maybe you have to take something temporarily or part time. But
absolutely,
I think it's super important not to say this is my next career until you really take the time to think about what it is that you're good at. And is it the right fit?
Absolutely. I mean, I think people, if you are in a situation where you've lost your job, you've got to put food on the table. You've got to focus on, I mean, it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You've got to start with the fundamental needs and then take care of those needs first, whatever that looks like. It could be temping in a series of jobs that, you know, you really are much better than, but you need the work. Network your way to the temp agencies where you can get some work to tide you over, you know, build some momentum. But while you're doing that, have a plan, build the plan, do the journaling, do the reconciliation work, do the ideation around the work that you really want to do, build some relationships. Everyone on this call has to have a active LinkedIn profile with a picture, with a about section that really describes who you are and what you're doing. And you can revise it, by the way, every day if you need to kind of adjust to the new thinking that you're beginning to adopt and express.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, we talked with somebody about personal branding. And I think some of the work that we did on that call will also help people with what we're talking about today. Yeah, because it is about who are you now, right? And how do you want to be seen in the world?
Mm-hmm. Right. And what can you do for people, right?
Well, I was going to say, one of the things that we talked about was that as you get older, you know, your mission or your vision for who you are changes. And we talked about the generativity thing that Erickson said that it really should be moved up about 10 years from where he put it. Because
right, right.
But I think that's a shift that we have to be cognizant of and own. And are you seeing that in the people that you work with?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's difficult. I mean, there's so much messaging around traditional career development process. And there's this kind of gap, I think, between the way traditional HR approaches this. And it's about, well, what skills do you have? And what companies do you want to work with and submit your resume to the open positions and all these kind of dead end procedures that used to work 30 years ago. But somewhere along the line, HR didn't get the message. Even though recruiters will say, well, yeah, I mean, I'm going to hire one out of 250 people that apply to this job. And it's just because they match all of the, they check all the boxes on the job description. There's no real voice out there other than people like me and a lot of other people who subscribe to these ideas, around, I guess, making this a more personal, effective process.
Yeah. So if you are in your 60s or 70s, okay, you may not be thinking career as we would define, you know, I'm climbing the ladder, I'm building my career, but you're still thinking about ways to be useful. Where do you see that going in this current climate?
I think it's a continuum. I don't think it's not a career. I think it depends on, how do we define career? Career is the kind of the accumulated capability and wisdom that you bring to what you do. And a job is part of a career. I don't mean to necessarily parse this, but I think you can be 75 and still engaged in your career. If when you were 55, you pivoted to something that was useful, that you developed passion around, process, engagement, traction with clients, and evolved that practice over time. Whether it is a personal service business, whether it's an actual retail business, whatever it is, it inures to your professional brand, and it evolves over time. And I think that we should be able to work as long as we want to work, doing what it is that feels most meaningful and impactful for us. So I don't know. I don't kind of see it as a cutoff or a distinction that we need to make about, a career versus a job. It can change. You can decide that you want to do more volunteer work as time goes on. Maybe you have saved enough money. It's, the earning the money is not as crucial as it was 10 years ago. Or maybe it still is. Maybe you still want to have something that's sustainable income-wise so that you can continue to pursue the lifestyle you want. Maybe you want to still live in your house or in the town where you live. Maybe you've got family around. I mean, all sorts of reasons come into play around the lifestyle choices that we make and the career choices we make to support that.
So what about pivoting? I hear young people particularly, they're like trying to make their decision about college. And they're saying, if I choose this, then I'm locking myself in, and then I look right at my career, your career. But the truth is, John, and you probably hear this too, a lot of people in our age group, once they get to this point of, I lost my job, now I need something else, they're saying, well, all I ever know is I've been an engineer, I've been a CPA, and I don't know how to do anything else.
Right. Well, my first question is, what do you think it is that you actually do? Because your job title does not define who you are, nor does it define the value that you provide in your business. So if you're a CPA and you have been managing people's accounts and doing their taxes for 30 years, and you've been working for a firm and they've laid you off, you have many opportunities. You have a credential. You can offer those services individually. You have clients, you have people that you've worked with, you have a network. And I would say, well, or you're an engineer, you've been working for an engineering firm, what is the specialty that you have loved doing? Of all the things that you were involved in, all the projects that you were involved in as an engineer, what are the most compelling? What are the great stories around them? What is the net transformative effect of the work that you've done? Mm-hmm. If you could talk to the clients that you've worked with in the past, what would they say about why it was so great to work with you? How can you distill that into a product or a service that you can take out and share, supply with other people? You've already got those people who are willing to promote you because they've just told you how wonderful you've been. So there's your core testimonial group right there. I'm just spinning some ideas around here off the top of my head to kind of show that there's a thread here. There's a process going forward to kind of figure this thing out. And here's an example of a guy that I worked with last year, who's a lawyer in Atlanta, actually. And he had been working for most of his career with a company, and the company had gone through different ownership, but he had been basically working for 25, 30 years for this one company doing licensing. I won't get into the specifics, but it was a very specific area of licensing, and he was a big expert in this area. And after the company was sold for the umpteenth time, they laid him off. I think he was 57. And he felt completely lost until he realized that he had this amazing network of people who knew him for years. He had all these secrets about licensing in his field, this knowledge that no one else really had. And instead of trying to go for another job, he actually set up shop of counsel for a law firm that had no one doing this work in the law firm. And they basically, in enough counsel situation, they kind of give you an office and a small draw, and you're kind of an entrepreneur within that law firm. And he's developed his own practice around this area that he worked with for many, many years, but now he's doing it for himself, and he's doing it in a very flexible, self-directed, personalized way.
Right. And I think that goes back to your point of talking to your network, so it's not just, what did I do as your lawyer?
Yeah.
But what were my strengths and weaknesses? So they start to tell you, you were really good at connecting with us. You really asked good questions.
Right. So here's the funny thing about this guy. I said to him at one point, one of our early sessions, I said, so are there any conferences coming up that you should be going at? And he went, oh no, I'm not showing my face at a conference now. I feel humiliated. They just fired me. I don't know what I would say. I said, no. You've got to go. You've got to go because the exact opposite is going to happen. People are going to be coming out of the woodwork to want to help you and want to work with you. So your instinct is completely wrong here. And sure enough, he kind of went kicking and screaming. Fortunately, his wife agreed with me, and she pushed him to do it. And he came back and he was like, oh my God, you were so right. I've got 50,000 business cards of people who want to talk to me about something. And I reconnected with my mentor from 25 years ago who I hadn't seen in forever. And he was so amazing. And we had dinner and da, 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 da. You just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And so now during COVID, you reconnect on Zoom or you reconnect in LinkedIn. And
here we are.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this is how I met you, was through LinkedIn.
That's right.
So yeah, there you are. It's a fabulous, fabulous networking environment, LinkedIn.
It really
is. I love it. So, John, I always like to ask my guests for two takeaways at the end. I know there's been a lot that we've talked about, but what two things would you really like to leave the audience with today?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is confidence comes last. A lot of people think, well, I'm going to kind of prepare here. I'm not really going to go out and start to do this work and try to make this pivot work or this new business until I feel more confident. And the truth is you're not going to feel more confident. you're going to feel confident way, way down the line in retrospect and realize that you have built confidence around the risks that you've taken. And I think it's fair to say that some of those risks will not pan out, but I would venture to say that for most, if not all of you, the majority of the risks that you take will pan out. And, you know, think about baseball. In baseball, batting 300 is a great track record, right? That's a great batting average. That's, you get hits 3 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
Right? That's a 30% 30% success rate. So if a 30% success rate is good in baseball, I would venture to say that your success rate in networking, finding connections that are going to be valuable for you is going to be probably more like 60 or 70%. So you've got to be willing to put yourself out there, take the risks, and the confidence will eventually follow, but don't wait for the confidence. So that's one thing. I've been vamping trying to figure out what the other thing
was. Well, I was writing down, put yourself out there. Maybe that's number two, take the risks.
Well, absolutely. I think that that you've got to, I mean, I would say that the thing that people are in my methodology, the thing that people are the most resistant about, and the lawyer is an example of this, but others as well, is this question of reaching out to former colleagues, former supervisors, managers, to have these deep conversations. And I talk about this process in detail in the book about going out and soliciting feedback. It's so important to find out how you are perceived in the world. And it feels very scary to sit down and have a constructive feedback conversation with someone. But everyone comes back from this saying, oh, I learned so much. It was not as bad as I thought. In fact, the consensus around the group of people that I talk to in separate conversations is that this is in fact my strength. Everything that I was kind of thinking maybe I could do, everyone says that's a great idea. So people come back from these conversations with actually a lot of confidence restored, because at least you know, right? At least you have a clear sense of, or clearer sense of what's going on out there. And I think so much of our uncertainty and our fears have to do with the fact that we just don't have the information, and we're afraid of hearing the information because we don't want to hear the bad news. In fact, the bad news is just a piece of information to help us course correct to a direction that's going to work. So I really encourage you all to just get that feedback, get the information, think of it as information. And what are you going to do based on the information? You know, if your heart has been set on opening up a cotton candy stand and that's something you've wanted to do for 30 years, and everyone in your network says it's a lousy idea for A, B, and C reasons, you would be terrible at that. You're going to, well, it may be crushing to you in the moment, but at least you know. And now you can focus on something that's going to work.
Right. If you always like candy, just make candy instead. No, but that's a good point. And I know on another call, we had a question of, well, how are you going to know that you're going to get honest feedback? But I think you have to set it up first that, you know, this is for my own benefit. So please tell me what you think are my strengths. Please tell me what you think are my weaknesses. It's okay. I can take it because it's going to help me grow.
Right. Exactly. And I think, look, you're going to get some people who are giving you straight feedback and valuable feedback. And then the others who won't, you want to do some pre-qualification to make sure you're talking to the right people. Follow your instincts about this.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been really helpful and useful.
Thank you.
And John has very graciously offered a free ebook to everybody on this call. I did put the link in the comment section. But the link is https://go.johntarnoff.com/ultimate.
So this is a big ebook. So the, I don't give this away on my website. This is kind of like the soup to nuts second act career reinvention story. Other than what I've written in the Boomer Reinvention book, this is actually a more updated look at a lot of skills and processes and whys around the second act.
And it's beautifully done, beautifully illustrated. Yeah, I really enjoyed looking at it. Mm-hmm. I think everybody should download it and get it, because I think it's helpful and it's something that you can share with other people that you know that are in this same kind of situation. So thank you for that.
Yeah, pleasure.
I'm gonna leave that link up while I tell you about our guest for next week. So her name is Shel Mendelson, and she is someone that I knew because she was the CEO of a franchise company that I worked for before. But Shel is now working with individuals, adults, who have ADHD, and how is that impacting their life and their career? So ADHD affects anywhere from 4.4% to 8% of all US adults. I didn't realize that. It affects their productivity and it affects their mental health. And so Shel's going to talk to us about how she works with clients, how it impacts them, what are some of the skills that they need to be able to be successful in their lives and in the work world without necessarily medication, maybe sometimes medication, but it's not all the time. So I think that's going to be a real, real interesting focus, a very narrow perspective on career work. I always like to end these calls with a quote from C.S. Lewis. And C.S. Lewis said, "You're never too old to set another goal or to dream a new dream." This has been Hey Boomer. My name is Wendy Green. And thank you all for joining. I am so grateful for all of you. And thank you for your time today, John.
Pleasure. It's great to be with you.
Bye.